Okay. As we are a week and a half away from Rosh Hashanah, and we're hopeful that it'll be a unique Rosh Hashanah experience for you guys. I think you'll enjoy the davening here. But it's probably easier to enjoy the davening if you have some idea what's going on in the davening. So I thought it'd be a good idea to do a Shir Kol that would cover the basis of the heart of Rosh Hashanah davening, which is Musaf. And we'll get to that in a second. Just let me just walk through the structure of Amidah in general and the structure of Amidah for Rosh Hashanah, and then we'll get down to business. Okay, so we all know, normally on a weekday, how many brachot are in the Amidah? 19, right, despite the name Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, why there 19 when the name is called Shmoneh Esrei? Because one got added. That's an interesting conversation in its own right. What's the normal structure? 3 brachot of praise, 13 of request, and 3 of thanksgiving. Great. What's the normal amount of brachot on Shabbat and Yom Tov? 7. Why? Well, the original 3 stay the same. The closing 3 stay the same, but you take out the middle 13 and put in a bracha about the day. Okay, so let's call that bracha Kedushat Hayom. It's about the sanctity of the day. Okay, why do you take out the middle? That's also quite an interesting topic. So maybe you could say requests in Shabbat and Yom Tov don't go together so much. Right, Shabbat and Yom Tov is this like island of tranquility in the human life. And maybe when you're serene and tranquil, you don't think about what you need and what you lack. So it's a very nice idea. Maybe Shabbat is not the time for Bakashot. Okay, I will point out, it's clearly not a universal rule. This is really a good topic in its own right for Shir Kol. Can anyone prove to me it's not really true that we have no Bakashot on Shabbat? Yeah, go ahead, Lush. Okay, if you think about it, it's not 100% true that there are no Bakashot in the other two places. Very good, Ari Roberts. In the other two parts of the Amidah. It's true that the first part of the Amidah tends to have no Bakashot, but it's really not true that the last part of the Amidah is all Thanksgiving. Okay. Sim Shalom is my favorite bracha of the Amidah. I don't know if you're supposed to have a favorite bracha, but I do. Sim Shalom is my favorite bracha. But it's all a request, right? It's not Thanksgiving. So it's not 100% true that there are no requests, but certainly we downplay the theme of requests on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Yes, Joey?
Isn't there only personal
requests? Okay, so Joey has a very good theory. Maybe we don't like personal requests on Shabbat and Yom Tov, but we're okay with communal requests. Excellent theory, Joey. There's one difficulty with it, though. It's a great theory. Based on that, in theory, we could leave in the middle section of the Amidah. Because think about it. Even though your theory has been stated, well, think about it. What's the form used for the middle section of Amidah for all the requests? They're all plural. In fact, this is a great trivia question. Okay, I'm already getting distracted. Two minutes into Shir Kol. What is the first request phrased in the singular in the entire Amidah? Oh, that's a great one. First time we shift from the plural to the singular in the Amidah. It's a tough one, guys. I'll give you a hint. It's not in the request section. Every single request is plural, right? Slach lanu, rifa'enu, okay, hashiveinu. Where's the first? Elokeinu Shema. Very good, Arlene. Okay, it's not till the Amidah is really over. Okay, very good. Okay, the pride of North Carolina. Okay, it's not the Gedul of Kainitzar. What?
South Carolina.
South Carolina, sorry. Oh, North Carolina. Okay. Okay, you know, I'm from New York, so it's all the same. Okay, so, not the Gedul of Kainitzar during the singular. So Joey's theory is a very good theory, but based on that theory, you could really say the whole middle section. Aaron Connor. Okay, you'd have to see if that would play out. Not bad. Yakir? Yeah, I guess so, in theory. Okay, not bad, not bad. Oh, you have a good theory now. It's only the very beginning and the very end. Okay, interesting. Yeah, Joe Cannon. No, you could say that, but the wording is in the singular, right? The grammatical form is, God open my mouth, right? Svatai, not svatenu. That's not fair. Aaron theology, right? There is no distinction between Yachid and Rabin. Okay, okay. Excellent. All right, guys. So the one exception to that, of course, is Musaf on Rosh Hashanah. All of a sudden, we have a new number. Not 19, not 7, but 9. And it sounds like, because there are 3 different themes we want to play in. So just let's go through the Musaf Amidah. What would you have? The first 3 would be like any other Shmoneh Esrei, right? Then 3 themes called Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofrot. Right? Malchiot, God's kingship. Zichronot, God's either judgment or God remembering the covenant. Shofrot, and then we go to the last 3. One other thing, what do we do for all of these? Okay, you guys will see this in Tefillah. First, we have an opening paragraph. Then we quote 10 psukim about the theme. Then we have a closing paragraph, okay? So it's opening paragraph, 10 psukim, closing paragraph, and then we blow the shofar. Okay, that's our practice. Have we got that? So our Musaf Rosh Hashanah is the regular opening 3, Malach, Yitzchak, and Shofrot, all three of them have opening paragraph, 10 psukim, closing paragraph, shofar blowing, then the last three. And now I'll tell you something cool, which I have these svarim in the room will help me out here. Okay, those of us who are Ashkenazi, what do we experience? We daven, which is everybody except for the three of us. Okay, we daven the Amidah, in our private Amidah, and then we blow shofar in the repetition Amidah. Believe it or not, guys, what do the svarim do? They blow shofar even in the private Amidah. Pretty cool, right? Everybody's diving to themselves, and all of a sudden it's like a timeout in the middle, and they blow shofar. Okay, now you may think I made it up. Jacob Mitrani, did I make that up? Where do you go?
No.
Okay, Moses Beebe. Okay, there you go. See, we have two excellent witnesses to confirm that this is what Sephardim do. Yes? If you are Chabad, I think. Who davens Chabad? You guys daven Chabad?
No, they do.
Where's your show? Why did they do it in Jerusalem? I'm just curious. So you hear it speak Grammy Tavern, right? He's the cousin, right? Okay. All right, so maybe it's not fine. It's not just the Sephardim then, even just the Sephardim.
Okay.
Why you guys do it in Miami?
No, I mean, I davened once a program at Chabad, and they do it during the
5-1-2. Okay, there you go. Guys, I have to tell you a good story about Jordan Cota. I apologize, the Chumash guys all know this already. But it shows you how serious the yeshiva is this year. Okay, this week in my Chumash year, Jordan Cohen came at 4:35. So that's pretty much just the end of Chumash year, right? So he says, Rabbi, I'll talk to you after this year. What happened? He went to the shower. Okay, while he's in the shower, his roommate locked the door. And he came, he's in the hallway in a towel. What's he supposed to do? Okay, so he was stuck there for like an hour. So I said, Jordan, like, how do you solve the problem? He said, well, eventually the madrich came by. So I said, yeah, what, no yeshiva guy came by? He said, no, I was the only person in the dorm. That's pretty serious. Everybody was in Chumash year. It's really amazing. Okay, that's a great proof. Way to go, Jordan. Okay. Okay, here we go. So now, okay, so let, again, some of you are not serious. Okay, so now, let's see now how it plays out, these nine brachot of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so let's go to the first mission, Rosh Hashanah. Here we go. Seder brachot. Now, one thing to be careful when you learn Gemara is to realize that what we do might not be what everybody agreed on. So we're going to see another model, and sometimes understanding the other model could be very helpful. So let's see what the other model is. Here we go. Olamir avod v'gvurd v'ktushat Hashem. We say the first three brachot of the Amidah. V'kolel malchiot imahen. Already things have shifted. What's to be kolel something? To include, right? To make it part of the klal. So we're going to see this is about Yochanan ben Nuri. What does Yochanan ben Nuri think? We do malchiot as the fourth bracha of the Amidah. What did he say? Insert malchiot into the third bracha. Insert into Atah Kadosh. Okay, the Eino Tokea. And what's the other deviation from what we do? Well, when you're inserting Malach into third bracha, you're not blowing shofar. Okay, great. Kedushat Hayom V'Tokea. Then you say the bracha about Rosh Hashanah, like a generic bracha about Rosh Hashanah, and you blow. Zichronot V'Tokea, Shavuot V'Tokea. V'Omer Avod Avod Avirkan. Then you close the Amidah V'Yochanan ben Nuri. Fine. So Yochanan ben Nuri has his unique position. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, what does Akiva say to him? Now, actually, before we can get Rabbi Akiva's objection, what's Rabbi Akiva going to do, guys? We'll see in a second. He's going to move Malchiot from Bracha 3 to Bracha 4, and also blow shofar. So if you think about it, the way Gemara really teaches you analytical skills, guys, you have two differences. There's one, the essential difference that leads to the other. Right? What are the two differences between Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Rabbi Akiva? A, is Malchiot in the third Bracha, in Kedushat Hashem, Atah Kadosh, or is it in the fourth Bracha? B, do you blow shofar for Malchiot, or do you not blow shofar? Everybody see there's two differences? Okay, and I could ask, maybe one is the real difference, and the other one only flows from it, and then which way does that go? That would be good analysis. We'll do that in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry,
there's
this guy sitting in the hall.
Can
I let them come?
Yeah, tell them to come in.
Bring your chair
and sit down. Brian Nathan, where are you coming from? Okay. They don't sell alcohol at Burger's Bar. Okay, yeah, right, go ahead. You think the real debate is about where Malchiot should go thematically. Okay, we'll come back to that in a second if you're right or not. Okay, anybody else in this question? Ever see that? So we have two differences, and we're trying to figure out where the real difference lies. Okay, next. Then Rabbi Akiva has an objection. It's a little bit of a funny objection. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, eino tokei l'malchiot. If you're not going to blow shofar for the Malchiot theme, lama hu maskir. Now, at the simple reading of the Gemara, what does it sound like Rabbi Akiva thinks? Without shofar, talking about Malchiot becomes pointless. Which is a little bit funny. Why is it pointless? Right? That's what he seems to say. If you're not going to blow shofar, you might as well just leave it out of the tefillah. Now, indeed, that's such an oddity that the Gemara asked that question. So you just skip down to the second to last line. The Gemara's in shock. Lamu maskir, rachmana amar idkar. Okay, good rule, guys. Just like, remember we said last week, how do you speak Aramaic? Take a Hebrew word, convert the shin into a tav and put an aleph at the end. So there's another good rule like that. What are dalids in Aramaic? They were once, what were they in Hebrew?
Zions.
Right, how do you say gold in Aramaic? Dahava. Right, zahav, right, there's that aleph rule. And zahav becomes dahava. Okay, so lahazkir becomes lahakir. So Rachmanim, the Torah said to mention it, meaning Malchiyot is an important theme in Rosh Hashanah. I should say it whether or not I am blowing shofar. So the Gemara says something really odd. Elolama eser leima tesha. Why would I say 10 psukim? I should only say 9. Now, some of you asked, where's Sal? Excellent question. This seems really arbitrary. Wait, just because I'm not blowing shofar, why does that magically lead to, oh, instead of 10 psukim about Malchiyot, I should say 9. See, that's a little bit odd. In fact, look at Rashi, guys. Okay, Rashi on source 5. Gemara says, hold the ishtini, ishtini. Ishtini is from which word? The word shoneh, since it's different, says Rashi. Malchiyot mizichrono l'inyan takia. If malchiyot are different regarding blowing shofar, she'ein tokin behen, ishtanu nami lefachot mehen. They should also be different by subtracting a pasuk. But it seems really arbitrary. Oh, let's find some way to make a difference. We'll drop a pasuk. We'd like it to be less arbitrary. This is a real rationale. So before I take comments, let me just sum up where we are. We have two questions on the board. One is we have this double debate between Rabbi Yochanan Ben Uri and Rabbi Akiva. Again, do you blow for Malchiyot and where do you place Malchiyot? And we've got this odd idea that Rabbi Akiva thinks if you're not going to blow shofar, you might as well go from 10 psukim down to 9. Avery.
So obviously,
ah, so A.B. Horowitz is a Lamdan. He says this is not some arbitrary quantitative distinction. What if I could somehow argue that the 10th Pasuk is inherently linked with shofar blowing? That would be great, right? Maybe 9 Pasukim are not linked with the shofar blowing. Maybe the 10th Pasuk has some important connection to the shofar blowing. And then the Gemara makes sense. If you're not going to blow shofar, you should drop that 10th Pasuk. So we'll see if we can get excellent theory, Avery. Excellent theory. Okay, in fact, I'm debating jumping in to do that now. Should we jump in and do that now? Yeah, let's jump in and do that now. Why not? We'll get that one out off the board. Okay, I'm going to go to page 2 to source 10. Okay. I'll just give you a little background. I'd like to give you a background who these people are. By the way, I made a typo here. It says Chet Lamed Aleph. Aleph should be Chelek. I guess the Kuf must be next to Aleph on the Hebrew keyboard. Okay, it's Chelek Aleph. Okay, Hare Kedem. There's a Rav today. He lives in Yerushalayim. His name's Rav Michal Shurkin. Okay, he is a very interesting story because he's incredibly Haredi. Okay, he makes the Chazon Ish with modern Orthodox. Okay, but he liked Rav Soloveitchik's Torah very much. So he went to go to Rav Soloveitchik's Shir, even though Rav Soloveitchik was from a different world. And then he published a lot of Rav Soloveitchik's Torah, okay, in a book called Harei Kedem. Okay, so you can get good Torah there, and often in the world of Lumdus, right, the fact that he's from the Haredi world doesn't affect the Lumdus. So look what he says there. Just one piece of background. I said there are 10, remember we said there's an opening paragraph, then 10 psukim, then a closing paragraph? Actually, the 10th pasuk is integrated into the closing paragraph. What might make me suspect? Maybe when, in terms of Avery's point, maybe the 10th pasuk has a different role to play than the other 9. So here we go. Hare Kedem. Tchilat ha-bracha u-haktama muveret at yesodot shel ha-bracha d'makat zechon v'shofar. He's going to explain the structure of all three. So what's the first section? It's a haktama. It is a... What's the haktama? It's introduction. Ha mivu eret, which Leva'er explains et hayasodot. I mean, what would you want in any ritual text? The opening paragraph should set the stage, introduce the theme. That's the opening paragraph. Great. Emtzeita da bracha hi amirata sar psukim. What's the middle section after you've introduced the theme? Let's quote a lot of scriptural verses that talk about this theme, about kingship, about memory, about shofar. Great. Okay, siyum habracha hu tefila u'bakasha l'kiyum inyanot habracha. Ah, interesting. What's the last part, though? But a request. So let's say it's kingship. I want to talk about divine sovereignty. So what do? Paragraph 1, God's the king. Paragraph 2, here's some psukim the Torah about divine sovereignty. Paragraph 3, God, please realize your sovereignty over the world. Have we got that? Okay, great. So that's the structure. Now things get great, guys. The The 10th pasuk is separate. The ikro eino shayach lechelak harayot shel apsukim, el hu shayach lechelak habakasha shel habracha. If I notice that the 10th pasuk is in the third section, what should I conclude? That 10th pasuk is somehow connected to the request. It's playing a different role than the other nine. Now the best part, guys. Vini bakasha mishkachla ode bakasha mamash owa idiat kia chofratzma. This gets to another famous Rav idea, Rav Soloveitchik idea, that fits all kinds of Hasidic Torah. You know how Rav Soloveitchik thought about Tekiyot Shofar? Not just an act of mitzvah, but what's it an act of? It's actually an act of prayer. Right? You know, all good Hasidic stories, it might be the ultimate prayer, because it's the, we all know that in theory of language, you can't ever really express what you want to say, so maybe the most profound utterance is the one that is not limited by the contours of human language, and maybe a shofar blast is trying to, I can't say it, but I'll express it through the medium of shofar. If I think of shofar as part of the bakasha, right, now it all fits beautifully. ABR, you should be very happy. Okay, it's not arbitrary in the slightest. What's going on now? Right, all nine brachot are just to convey the theme. All nine psukim. The 10th pasuk being the third paragraph, what is it? It's part of the bakasha. But the bakasha in Rosh Hashanah happens through the medium of the shofar. So now that makes sense. If there's no shofar blowing, that pasuk becomes pointless. Everyone got it? That is much better. Sal, you happy? It's not arbitrary anymore. It's a nice idea. Right? Again, until now it sounded arbitrary. Oh, you're not going to blow shofar? You might as well drop the 10th pasuk. But according to Rav Soloveitchik's idea, it's not arbitrary in the slightest. The 10th pasuk is set off from the other nine. It was part of bakasha. Maybe the bakasha is going to happen through the medium of the shofar. Now it follows logically. No shofar, no bakasha, no 10th pasuk. Yes? Ah, that is a great question. Ever got to Moses Beebe's question? That's a really good question. If we're really going to claim that the whole third paragraph is bakasha, and bakasha without shofar falls away, so we should drop the whole thing. So Rasulay is going to have to say that the third paragraph has multiple roles. You have to say like a dual identity there. And there must be some other identity beyond, but that's a very good question. Okay? But I think you'd have to go in that direction. We probably should take a look at all those third paragraphs and read it carefully. But you're right, you're onto something. Okay, excellent question, Moses Beebe. Okay, we're good? Everybody good? Okay? All right, great. So let's move back now to the previous issue. Let's move back to the previous issue. Okay, go back to page 1, please. Okay, we're going to do one minor point, and then we'll get to the major issue of the day. Gabe, how's it going there? Okay, good. Guys, you know, Gabe Shore is paid by, what's it, Polo? Paid by Polo to endorse those shirts. Okay, that's why, A, he wears them every day, and only the big logo, right? They refuse to go with the small logo. Okay, let's go. Okay, so we said that there's two differences between Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Rabbi Akiva. Again, what were the two differences? Where to place Malchiot and whether to blow shofar. What did Rabbi Akiva say explicitly to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? If you're not going to blow shofar, you might as well not say it. Okay, let's look at the Yom Teruah Source 3. Okay, and I'll tell you something very interesting about the Sefer. It's kind of unique. Okay, I know a lot of people have written commentaries on Masechto. Usually someone writes a commentary on the entire tractate. But there was a fellow named Rav Moshe Ibn Chabib. It's a good name, Rav Moshe Ibn Chabib. He wrote a commentary on Prukim. He had like a perek he liked. So he had one perek from Sukkah, one perek from Rosh Hashanah, one perek from Yoma. It's pretty cool. Just a commentary on three chapters. Okay, so the commentary on the fourth perek of Rosh Hashanah is called the Yom Teruah, for obvious reasons. Okay, so let's see what this fellow Moshe Ibn Chabib says in the Yom Teruah. What seems to be bothering him? That I'm not blowing shofar when I say Malchiot. Let's keep Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's structure. Excellent. This really highlights what I said about what are they really arguing about. If Rabbi Akiva is really just upset that you're not blowing shofar with Malchiot, what's one possible solution? Keep Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's structure, but do what simply? Just blow shofar in the third bracha. Like, what's the big deal? Right, again, what's the real point of contention? If Rabbi Akiva is just upset that you're divorcing shofar blowing from Malchiot, you could have kept the structure and blown shofar there. So before we move on, guys, what might be the answer? Really, Roni Bushin hit on it before. What if Rabbi Akiva is not just upset about the lack of shofar blowing? What if he's also arguing, or maybe even primarily arguing about the placement? He doesn't think it belongs there. Right, but it's almost like the Yom Teruah is assuming the real issue is the shofar blowing, so leave the Yochanan restructure, and just blow shofar right there in the third bracha. So look what he says. Okay, he even keeps that assumption all the way through. Skip down to the answer. How do I know where the answer is? Very good. Yesh lomar in the third line. Huzarut. That would be? Very good, guys. In modern Hebrew, you say someone's muzar. What are you saying? They're strange. In Torah, when it says a zar cannot eat truma, what does it mean? Well, no. If you're weird, you're a weird Kohen, you can still eat truma. It's okay, guys. Don't worry. All weird Kohanim, you're okay. What does it mean in that context? You're a stranger. You're weird in the sense that you are a non-Kohen. You're far into the kuna. Okay, so zarut is strangeness, weirdness, etc. She says it would be strange. Diabrach achat mafseket belitkia. Now, Jared Feingold did not like this so much. I have to admit, it is a difficult svar. What did Yom Tov want to claim? Why does Rekiva not like that? It would just feel weird. Why would it feel weird? Think about it. Bracha 1, bracha 2, bracha 3. Ma'achir k'tusha Hashem with a tkiya. Bracha 4, k'tusha Hayom. No tkiya. And then 5 and 6 with a tkiya. So it wouldn't be neat. Essentially, that's a halachic factor according to him. Like, it would feel weird, and you wouldn't have this nice, neat package. We want to have a nice, neat package. Shwen Stab was very unhappy with this far. But that's the Yom Shu wants to claim. Okay, that really would have worked, but it would mess up the neatness of Shofar, and therefore we don't do it. But maybe we should go in a different direction. So we go to the Aruch Lener in Source 4. Aruch Lener is Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. He was a rabbi in Germany in the 1800s. Had the rabbis in Germany in the 1800s differ from the rabbis of Poland and Lithuania? You know what they used to do that was different? Okay, well, the rabbis of Germany were much more exposed to border culture. They often went to university. One of the first Orthodox rabbis to go to university was Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. He went to the University of Würzburg. Okay, so let's see what he says here in the Aruch Lener. Nirish Atam Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. What's his rationale? Who came in Shemalchiyot hu lahamlich. There we go. There's that hey again. A little grammar once again from last week. What is lahamlich? Not to be king, but to coronate, right? Because the hey makes it causative. Very good. Who said that over here? Way to go, Moses Beebe. Okay, a little grammar there from Rambam. Excellent. Okay. Lahamlich ulahaktish shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu me'ein kedushat Hashem l'chein kolel imahem. What is he going to claim? What's the issue here? That kedushat Hashem, the God being Kadosh, and God being the King are thematically connected. Right? That's why he wants to move it. They're one theme. Which is the question, is that true or not? Right? Someone said to me, isn't God's... Well, let's go back for a second, guys, to highlight the point. What's the second theme called? Second bracha l'amidah? What do we call it in our Mishnah? Gvurot. God's power, God's might. What do you think, guys? Should that be the same theme as God's kingship? It could be, but not necessarily. Maybe being powerful and mighty is not the same as being the king. So not all these things go together. So if God being kadosh, if God is holiness, is separateness part of monarchy, or is it a totally separate theme? What does the Yochanan ben Nuri think, apparently? Holiness and the monarchy are connected. Now let's plug in Roni Bushin. If I was Rabbi Kiva, what might I say now? I think I would say, no, monarchy is one thing and holiness is different. You can be holy and not the monarch. You can be monarch and not holy. So maybe that would be an easier approach. You wouldn't have to go through, oh, it's too strange. It's not about strangeness. The real debate here, it might be about the placement of monarchy. Does monarchy really integrate seamlessly into the third parak, third bracha, or does it really belong in the fourth bracha and not the third? Let me just sum what we've done so far before we get to the last major issue of the day. Okay, we have discovered that A, we tried to explain the absence of the tenth, why the absence of the tenth pasuk is not arbitrary. B, we tried to figure out what's going on here, what's the real debate between Yochum and Rabbi Akiva. We said that according to the Yom Trua, essentially Rabbi Akiva is really just, he doesn't like the fact, he's focused on the shofar blowing, right? He's adamant that Malkiyot has to have shofar blowing. So in theory, according to the Yom Trua, Rabbi Akiva would have been fine with placing Malkiyot in the third bracha. Why do you object ultimately? Because if you put Malkiyot in the third bracha, it would be weird. Why would it be weird? Because you wouldn't be then, right, blowing the shofar. And sorry, because if you would blow the shofar there, sorry, I confused everybody. Rabbi Akiva thinks you have to blow shofar for Malkiyot. Then if I put Malkiyot in the third bracha, I create a weirdness factor. What would be the weirdness factor? Blow, don't blow, blow, blow. But again, according to Yom Trua, Rabbi Akiva essentially would have been happy to put Malkiyot there. I could have put Malkiyot in the third bracha. But the weirdness makes me not do it. What would I like to argue based on the Aruch Lener? It wasn't that Rabbi Akiva was happy to put it there. Maybe there was a thematic debate. do kingship and holiness integrate? Or are they separate themes? So maybe Rabbi Akiva wasn't saying, I'd be happy to put Malchiyot there, but there's this weirdness factor. I'm not happy to put Malchiyot there. I don't think Malchiyot and Kedusha are the same thing. Okay, any questions or comments? Have we done thus far? We're all good? Yeah, Moses. Because again, Kedusha Hayom is not about God's sanctity. It's about the sanctity of Rosh Hashanah. So maybe he thinks the essential theme of Rosh Hashanah is divine kingship. So that is not in conflict. That fits together seamlessly. What is Rosh Hashanah all about? God is the king. And therefore, Malchiyot and Kedusha Hayom do go together. Okay? We're all good? Okay, great, guys. Now we get to the last major issue. Before I get to the last major issue today, one other brief thing. Okay, there's an interesting theory here, which I'm just going to do outside. Okay, we said before, I'll tell you something interesting, and here I'll do a little advertisement for Shabbat for a second. Here, let's go back to the opening part of this year, guys. We said the regular Amidah on a daily basis has 19 brachot. The Shabbos Amidah has 7, and the Yom Tov Amidah has 7. Okay, but, this is quite interesting, when we say the Shabbos Amidah and the Yom Tov Amidah, it's every tefillah has the same number, right? It's always 19, or it's always 7. Now, Shabbos is quite interesting, because notice what happens on Shabbos. You ever notice that the three Amidot are different? Like the themes we talk about Friday night are not the themes of Shabbos day, are not the themes of Shabbos Mincha. It's almost like Shabbos is such a varied, interesting day. We can't incorporate and encapsulate all in one text. We need like three different texts. But nonetheless, what still follows? Somehow we're adamant, it's always going to be 7 brachot. Right, this is like a good answer to a trivia question. The one day of the year that's not like that is Rosh Hashanah. What do you have? If it's not Musaf, actually, how many brachot are you saying? If it's not Musaf, anyone else? How many brachot are you actually saying? Well, think about it. If it's not Musaf, it's like any other Yom Tov, namely 7. Right, the opening 3, Kedushat Hayom, and the closing 3. So in our practice, Rosh Hashanah is kind of unique. Oh, it's 7 all the time. Oh, you get the Musaf, all of a sudden it's 9, correct? Okay, now we do that, but that doesn't mean everybody agrees. So if you saw them here, you notice, what did he quote? What did some people think? Some people thought every tefillah of Rosh Hashanah should have 9. Okay, so that would be an interesting minhag. I don't know if anybody does it. I don't think so. I think we all follow the other position just to do 7 and then 9 for Musaf. I'm not going to argue who's right. I'm just going to argue experientially if it creates something interesting. It really makes Musaf and Rosh Hashanah like a crescendo. It sticks out, like it's the dramatic high point. It's almost like you feel during Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, I'm not going to say these words again. Right, I will tomorrow, the second day, but I'm not going to say it at Shacharit, I'm not going to say it at Mincha. It's experientially a great interesting factor. Right, this Amidah is unique Amidah. It only appears in Musaf, not for the other 3. Okay, now for the last thing. All right, Charlie, you can okay there?
Yep.
Okay. Guys, really, I decided I have to stop making fun of Charlie, okay? Actually, it's not really true, but he made me feel badly. It turns out that he has medical needs why he has to always be in Burger's Bar at Burger 150. Apparently, there's like the doctor has said that, okay? They're very upset that he's 6 feet tall and only 138 pounds, right? He's supposed to eat as many burgers as possible every day. So really, we should be sympathetic. Guys, it's just a medical condition, okay? It's really just a medical condition. Okay. Hey, Charlie, you know you're in trouble. This is the first time ever the guy from Burger's Bar said to a student, why are you here again? Go back to school. Like, that never happened before. Okay, so let's go. Now get to the last issue of the day. Okay, we said that we say 10 psukim. Okay, we said that the psukim are from, I actually didn't emphasize this yet. What do we tend to do? 3 from Torah, 3 from Ketuvim, and 3 from Nevi'im, and then we end with 1 from Torah, great. Okay, what's obviously a little bit unusual about that? Everyone asked this question, what's unusual about that? Yeah, we have this famous book we call Tanakh, right? It's not called Tachan. It is called Tanakh because it's Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. How come all of a sudden, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, we have this new order we've never seen before? First the Chumash Psukim, then the Ketuvim Psukim, and then the Navi Psukim. Okay, well, maybe this is a famous question. We are now going to investigate 5 answers to that question, and that's going to wrap up this year. Okay, everyone turn to the second page, please. Okay, let us see 5 answers to that question. Okay, let us start with Tosfot. Okay, we'll start with Tosfot's answer. We're going to see a whole bunch of answers. Okay, says the Tosfot, Matzchil b'torah m'sayim b'navi, v'yim tamar d'b'chol duchta. Oh, good word to know. What is duchta in Aramaic? Have another word duchta means? Place. Very good. Very good. Who said that? Okay, excellent. How do you know that, Ben? The Gemara card. Way to go. Gemara card's paying off already. B'chol duchta, in every place, mashma, denavi adiv miktuvim. What do we tend to assume in our tradition? What to be adiv? Yeah, guys, if an Israeli says to you, ma'ata ma'adiv, what do you prefer? What's preferable? Very good. Okay, so what is preferable? Navi is usually preferable. Kedamar kata b'tor v'shtan b'neviim v'mishlosh b'ktuvim. V'achi kamar kwa dekhti b'ktuvim b'reisha v'nevi. So if Neviim are usually preferable, if Neviim usually get center stage, how come all of a sudden ktuvim is first? V'yishlomo mishim dekroi detail mishlev yiv kadmu Neviim. Who knows what Tosu's answer is, guys? What's Tosu's getting at? Why are ktuvim first here? Anyone? Yeah, Avery? Okay, but, yes, Simon? Yeah, but why though? Where's the preference come from? So you have to hear kodem here doesn't mean preferable. It actually has to do with, what's the word kodem mean literally? Yeah, Jared? Yeah, it's historical. Right? It's not true that all of Neviim takes place before all of Ketuvim. Right? If traditionally we attribute, let's say, Mishlei to Shlomo HaMelech, where does Shlomo fit in Neviim? So he's in Malachim. So there's some Neviim that precede him, but there's some Neviim. Right, Yeshayahu is after him. Yirmiyahu is after him. Not only that, if Tehillim is attributed, well, not all of it, but if a lot of Tehillim is attributed to David HaMelech, David HaMelech is pretty early in Neviim. Not only that, I'll give you good news, guys. All the psukim we say in the Ketuvim section of Rosh Hashanah, they're all from, which book do you guess? Tehillim. So it says, it's simple chronology. That's all it is. Right, we like chronology. That's a very simple way of sequencing things. Normally, Neviim would come first, but if we're quoting Pesukim from Tehillim and then Pesukim from Yirmiyahu, so Tehillim is before Yirmiyahu. So it's just chronology playing itself out. Yeah, Roni Bushin. What do you mean at the same time? David HaMelech lived way before Yirmiyahu. No, but maybe we're focusing on the specific Pesukim we're saying. We're about to quote a lot of Pesukim from Tehillim, and then we're going to go Pesukim from Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu, so we should go with Tehillim first. Yes, Jordan Stauber. No, because if you think about it, here guys, this is good general Jewish knowledge. This is actually great. Okay, I didn't even think about this. Usually I plan my tangents, I didn't even plan this one. Okay, are we likely, when we're quoting Pesukim, are we likely to quote from narrative or from more poetic sections? What would you guess? In Davening. Yeah, would you not? Like, we're not going to quote, and then Yeshua like waged war against the Canaanites, right? That's not so relevant. We're going to quote poetic expressions about God, right? So now, if I ask myself, both in Ketuvim and in Navi, where is there more poetry? So in Ketuvim, where's the poetry? Tehillim. In Navi, where's the poetry? Not in Neviim Rishonim. In Neviim Rishonim, are almost all narrative, right? Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, those who love poetic beauty of Tanakh. They're more drawn to Sefer Yeshayahu, for example, or Yirmiyahu, right? I like the poetic sections very much. I often find, okay, let's go open Yeshayahu, right? That's where it's found. Somebody asked me my favorite part of Tanakh, of Nach. I said, like, the end of Yeshayahu, those poetic sections at the end of Yeshayahu, right? So now, it's not an accident, guys, that all the Pesukim from Ketuvim are going to be Tehillim, and I think all the Pesukim from Neviim are Neviim Achronim. Okay? We're good? Haven't got the first answer down? Okay, great. Let us see. We're going to have five answers, guys. If you didn't like that, we're going to have five answers. Okay, over to the Ran. Let's do the Ran. Okay, I'm source 14. Okay? Here we go. The Efshar Ditamim Shemalin B'Kdushato Ayedit Kiyat Shavavim Ridin Hilkoch Matchil B'Torah Datchal Amalyi Vaka K'tuvim Delekli Torah. Here it is. The last line. Kodmin K'tuvim Munavim Kedeshi Akar Kach Malin B'Kodesh. What is the Ran claim, guys? Why do we do... I knew Jordan Stabber's not going to be happy. Why? Really? Amazing. Right, Jordan, you're unpredictable. It's good to be unpredictable. It's boring when you're predictable. Okay, way to go. Okay? You know, it's like I was like this political columnist. Like, that's why I hate reading political columnists, because like, certain like left-wingers, you always know what they're going to say. Right-wingers, you always know what they're going to say. Right? You want something a little dramatic. You don't know what they're going to say. A little drama in life. All right, so here we go. So what does the Ran say? Why do we do Ketuvim first? Actually, precisely because Neviim is more kadosh. We want to create the sense of Malin Bakodesh. Okay, what's the obvious difficulty? Moses Bibi. Yeah, we start with Torah. So he's going to have to claim we kind of have different themes. We on the one hand, you got to start with Torah. On the other, you also want the Malam Bekodesh theme. It becomes a little bit tricky, but that's what the Ron would have to say. Okay, Jordan Stabber, why do you like it? Okay, there you go. That's a good reason. Okay, I did not mention that. Okay. Very good. Okay. Now, what is the Ron assuming? We're going to come back to this point. The Ron's assuming that in the comparison Nevi'im and Ketuvim, what is more Kedusha? Nevi'im. Okay, it's just that we want to create this Malam B'Kodesh. Okay, let us now go to, okay, source 12. Yeah.
How is it Malam B'Kodesh doesn't make it like that
they're equal? Oh, we get that right now. Did you get that from the Ritva? Okay, very good. Roni Bushin's a serious guy. Guys, you know what you all have to do? This is the best move. Everyone loves to be an alumni who comes back to yeshiva. You know why? Because all of a sudden you could flaunt the dress code, right? No socks and no collar. It's just a great move, guys. So come back. Come back afterwards, visit yeshiva. It's the best thing ever. Okay. What? You have socks there, Roni? Okay, there you go. You go for that. You know, there are these gemaras about, like, you could do one act and how many aveiros you could violate in one act. We just realized, like, you know, how many dress code violations do you have in, like, in one time? Luckily, he's not wearing shorts there. Okay. He's a good guy. Run a machine. You should all go meet him. Okay. Let's go to source 12. Now, the Ron was assuming that Nevi'im actually have more Kedusha than Ketuvim. Let's see if that's really true. This thing is a very interesting question. Look at source 12. The Riba Tosukat, the Devadai Nevi'im v'Ketuvim, Shavim v'Ketushatan. What's his claim? It's actually not true. They're the same level. Now, he's got two great proofs, guys. Really good proofs. Shaharei kishekbidu b'sifrei kodesh namagila b'seder hanachatan. That's about how you put them down on the table. Lo hefrishu ben nevim v'ktuvim. El shomam b'yacha manich in Torah gab nevim v'ktuvim. V'lo nevim v'ktuvim gab b'torah. Now, you might have seen, sometimes the rabbis were very zealous about this. Right? If they walk by and they see that, like, your pnini halacha is on the Tanakh, what are they going to do? Right? Take the Tanakh out and put it on top of... because Chumash is a special status in our tradition, right? Chumash Devar Hashem is a special status that goes on top of everything else. But apparently, the way the Gemara phrased it, what happens if I walk in and see that your Mishle is on your Yishayo? What did it sound like? It doesn't matter, right? The Gemara talks about Torah is on top of Nevi'im V'Ketuvim and not Nevi'im V'Ketuvim on top of Torah. But the implication is we're kind of indifferent to where you put the Nevi'im, where you put. So maybe it's simply not true that in our tradition, the Nevi'im is more kadosh than Ketuvim. He's got another proof. Okay, v'chein l'inyan d'meyen. What's d'meyen? And what d'meyen is? Okay, it's not from the word domeh. It's from the word damim. What else could it mean? Money. There's a rule when I sell estate for Torah, some kedusha gets transferred to the money. So I shouldn't use the money for a lesser item. So I could sell a Navi and buy a Torah. I can't sell a Torah and buy a Navi. Again, in that Gemara, what does the Gemara do and categorize? It categorizes Nevi'im V'Ketuvim the same. So now, Roni Bushin is absolutely right. What does it sound like in two different Gemara and Megillah? We don't really differentiate between the Kedusha of Navi and the Kedusha of Ketuvim. Okay, apparently in our tradition, Chumash is a separate thing. Chumash has special status, but Nevi'im V'Ketuvim do not. Okay, we're good? Joe Kanner, you want to wake up Yakir? Yakir, come, we're about to get the great chiddush. What's going on? What are you so tired about? Okay. Okay, here we go. Poor guy, the Shana Bek gets picked on. I wake him up in the middle of Shir Chloe. Okay. So let's see. We'll come back to that point in 1 second, guys. We're going to see a very, very deep idea in a minute. But let's see the Ron's own answer. Okay, look at the Ron's answer. Last line. Second to last line. In the Ritva, sorry, second to last line. She'ein choshvin kedusha gedola b'ketuvim. People don't think it's kadosh. V'ishu kulo mizmer l'david l'mishorim. V'lo ne'marvim sin divrei Hashem kon sham b'nevim. U'kedei shelo yizalzelu b'kedusha tan. What's mean, mizalzel in something? To belittle it. What are we afraid of? The reality, according to Ritva, is Navi is just as holy as ketuvim. What's he afraid of? The average common person does not take ketuvim seriously, right? Ulaharot, there's that hey again, laharot. To show, shekulan brachodesh, tiknu laomram tchila. What's Rebbe want to claim? We want to make a point in Rosh Hashanah that people should take Ketuvim seriously. So let's just sum up the three answers thus far. I'm going to give you one more answer, and we'll see a very profound idea and wrap it up here, guys. What do we have so far? Why do we do Ketuvim Nevi'im? If I ask Tosfos, what would Tosfos say? I do Ketuvim first because it's chronology, because Tehillim is written before Yirmiyahu. If I ask the Ron, what would the Ron say? Malam Bekodesh. What's the Ron's assumption? That Nevi'im has more Kedusha than Ketuvim. What does the Ritva think in terms of that question? It's not true. So according to the Ritva, why do I do Ketuvim first? Precisely to show the significance of Ketuvim. It is just as Kadosh as Nevi'im. We're going to put it first. Okay, everyone good so far? We're all great? Yeah, Avery. You say, even if I want to highlight the theme, why now? Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. Yes. Yakir's, see, you already asked a question a minute after you woke up. Go ahead, Yakir.
Well, then, in Megillah, when it tells that the two is like a little bit crazy than Megillah. Like,
which Gemara Megillah are you thinking of?
When the Targum,
okay. So it is true that they're more nervous about being Metargim, but being nervous about translating and level of sanctity might not be the same question, right? All right. We'll debate more another time. That's a good Megillah reference there, Yakir's Rebner. Very good. Okay, now I'm going to save the fourth answer to last. I'm going to wrap up this year. But before I am going to teach you a very, very profound idea from Rav Huner. Okay, there was a Rav in... Actually, I should give you his whole life story for a second. Okay, here's a very interesting life story. Let's talk about Rav Yitzchak Kuttner for a second. You probably haven't encountered his ideas yet. Well, this farmer in the back there right next to Ari Roberts. Ari Roberts has the best makom in the Beit Midrash. Nice little quiet corner, and he's next to Great Svar. Okay, that was Tal Singer's makom last year. Great makom. Okay, here we go. There was a man named Yitzchak Kuttner who was born in Warsaw. He learned in a yeshiva called Slobodka. Okay, the Slobodka yeshiva sent the branch to Chevron in the 1920s. There was a yeshiva in Chevron in the 1920s. And then, unfortunately, there's something we know, there were riots in 1929, and a lot of the yeshiva students were killed. Okay, famous Arab riots in 1929. The yeshiva at that point moved to Yerushalayim. Right, that's where right now, guys, if you go to a neighborhood called Givat Mordechai, there's a yeshiva called Chevron. It's a little bit funny. Why is the yeshiva called Chevron in Yerushalayim? Because it's still the remnant of that yeshiva in Chevron that moved to Yerushalayim. Rav Huner was in Israel at the time, but he was not in the yeshiva. That's why he was not hurt. He became very close to Rav Kook. Then he moved to Brooklyn and became the yeshiva, called Chaim Berlin. Okay, in fact, Jordan Stauber's grandfather learned there. He was a student of Rav Huner. And he was a very, very significant Baal Machshava. And he mostly liked to root his Machshava in the Chagim. Right, so looking at that safe in the back with Pachad Yitzchak, with the exception of one volume, most of them are about the holidays. Right, there's one called Igrot V'Ktavim, like his letters and his articles, but mostly through the Chagim. He's really a very, very deep thinker, worth knowing. So let's go to Rav Yitzchak Kuttner on Shavuos, source 15. I'm just going to raise the question he asked, and I think you're going to see, if you want to see a profound answer, you're about to see a profound answer. Tani, ready? Ready for a profound idea?
Ready.
Okay, don't miss this one. Okay, here we go. What did we say thus far? The Ritva had two proofs that the Kedusha of Nevi'im is the same as Ketuvim. What were the two proofs? One, placing books on top of each other. Two, selling. Okay, great. What did the Ron assume? That the Kedusha of Nevi'im is higher. How could the Ron forget those two Gemara in Megillah? Is there any way to salvage the Ron? Everyone see the problem? Okay, here comes the profound idea. I'm just going to say something amazing. Okay, here we go. Source 15. The Bishash Anudanim al Nevi'im v'Ketuvim b'yachas l'sifreihem. When I'm evaluating Nevi'im v'Ketuvim, what's b'yachas? Okay, good. Very good, guys. In relation, right? Yachas is a proportion. That's why, a little yeshivish terminology here. Okay, if you say someone has yichus, what are you saying? They have good lineage, right? Relationships, relatives, yachas in relation to. B'yachas is Ephraim. If I'm talking about the books, da'ayinu sifrei nevim sifrei ketuvim. Okay, here we go. It's your key Latin word. Okay, what does the word qua mean in Latin? Qua. You know that word? Okay, it means as. Like, which category am I thinking about? Like, I could say, I am analyzing Moses Beebe qua Sephardi fellow. I am analyzing Moses Beebe qua a righteous student. Right, qua really nice guy. Right, there are different ways I could be categorizing him. Okay, that's the word qua. So now, if I am thinking about Nevi'im v'Ketuvim qua books, right, as their books, az anu omrim ki kedushatam shaveh. Haven't got that? So he says, I could think, here's a book. This book is Sefer Yeshayahu. And I've got another book. This book is Sefer Mishlei. From that perspective, how do I think about them? They're the same. Now you might say, okay, what other way is there to evaluate them? Let's keep reading, guys. It's going to get deep. Okay? Mifnei sheshem Sefer Enu Shach b'dvarim shebo chativa. Abo b'shanachudanim al nevim b'ktum b'tor divreihem. What is the other aspect of not the book, but the words? Now, I want to plug it in a little bit further. Okay, when Nevuah was given, how does Nevuah differ from Tuvim? Because when Nevuah was originally given, what was the point? It was meant to be orally delivered. Ketuvim was never meant to be orally delivered. That means there's a whole element to Nevi'im that doesn't you don't have with Ketuvim, right? There is written discourse and there is oral discourse. So maybe if I'm focusing on Nevi'im qua book, qua written discourse, it is no different than Ketuvim. But what if I focus on the other aspect of Nevi'im as something that you would proclaim, something you'd give over orally? Then what would I say all of a sudden? Nevi'im's got something that Ketuvim doesn't have at all. I think it's already a deep idea, but now it gets even better, guys. Let's plug that in now to save the Ron. What was happening to Gemara and Megillah? What were we talking about? Putting books on top of each other. What aspect of Nevi'im is being related to there? It's just Nevi'im qua book. So at that point, what should I say? Nevi'im and Ketuvim are one and the same. Right? It's just a book. It's the same book as, same level, it's not just a book, but it's the same level as Ketuvim. What am I doing on Rosh Hashanah? I am reciting the Psukim. When I'm reciting Psukim, what am I doing? I'm hearkening back to the oral transmission element of Navi. Once I'm doing that, what's true all of a sudden? Navi has something that, isn't that great? That Ketuvim do not. So the Rav Huner has a brilliant salvation of the Ron. Right, qua book, Nevi'im and Ketuvim are the same thing. Qua oral discourse, right, Nevi'im is qualitatively different than Ketuvim. That's why sometimes I equate the two, and sometimes, so I think it's a very nice distinction, but I think it also has interesting implications for thinking about words and their power. Right, are words powerful in written form? Are words powerful in oral discourse? It's not the same thing. Okay, you guys ready? We're all good? Yeah, Joe Stanton.
I don't understand why, in that case, we put the order of Tanakh.
Well, again, what did the Ron want to argue? You cannot like the Svar, but what do you want to argue? It's an example of Malin B'Kodesh.
Yeah.
Since we're citing words, Nevi'im has more Kedusha.
But that's on the book, right? I mean, like, the book is not. It's Nevi'im first.
So,
yeah, it should be, like,
somehow. No, that's...
Yeah, like...
It's a little bit like Avi's question. Why do we suddenly pick the Malin B'Kodesh theme right here? It's pretty like Avi's question. It's just, instead of asking it on the...
No,
on the Ritva, you're asking it on the Ron.
Yeah, so I would have thought that you only put the view first, as we have when it's written, when you're saying it. So it should be the view first.
I understand what you're saying, but because he's Umam Kedusha, plays that backwards. Okay. You could not like the Svar, but that. Look, if Rav Huner might be right, you then have a different question on the Ron.
Okay?
All right, guys, last answer to review. You guys did great again today. Last answer. I didn't say think of this answer, but I mean, it's not my own, but I couldn't find remember who said it inside. Okay? There might be another way to solve the chronology problem, guys. Okay, not a question of when it was written, but something different. Let's talk about shofar for one second, guys. Okay, the Pesukim in the Torah about shofar, what would you guys say? Where are they from? Where is there a shofar in the Torah? Okay, what about the word shofar there? The word shofar, very good, yeah, on Har Sinai. So all three Pesukim from Torah are about Sinai. Then you have Pesukim in Ketuvim. They're Pesukim like Al Elokim b'Truah Hashem b'Kol Shofar. Tikku b'Kodesh Shofar. What do they sound like? They're not about a past event or a future, right? They're simply about shofar blowing. Which, right? What is Tehillim about? Let's praise God with a shofar. Okay, what's Navi about? Which shofar is there in the prophetic period? Vayah b'yom ha'u yitaka b'shofar gadol. What's that about? Yeah, someone just said it. Who said it? I heard someone whisper the right answer. Yeah, that's the Messianic shofar. What maybe the simplest chronological approach? Maybe the chronology is not a function of when it was written. The chronology is a function of what it's about. That makes a lot of sense. We are playing shofar themes through Jewish history. Let's start with Chumash because the earliest shofar theme is Sinai. Let's go to Ketuvim because that's about present for the sake of argument. Praising God in the shofar. Why should we leave Nevi'im for the end? Because that's about the messianic aspiration. Please, there'll be a shofar. Suffering will cease. Justice will be served in the world. Right? That's what we're yearning for. Maybe that's the great simplest explanation for why we play it out this way. All right, guys. Little review of the whole shiur. We're doing great here. Charlie, you made it to the whole shiur. Excellent. What do you do for lunch, Charlie?
I haven't made it out yet.
Okay. Charlie, let's go. It's going to be great lunch in Shiva today. Where's Brian Nathan? You left already?
Yeah.
Where are you going for lunch today? Okay. Noah, I thought you'd influence them. I think the influence is going the other way. I've noticed you every breakfast at Holy Bagel No Ground. I think the influence is going the wrong way here.
I didn't went to Holy Bagel today. No, I didn't.
What?
I didn't went to Holy Bagel. Yeah.
Okay, this is amazing, guys. Even when the yeshiva serves Holy Bagel, it goes out to Holy Bagel. Okay. Oh my God, no Brown. You need help. You need help. Okay. All right, here we go, guys. Okay, brief review. Okay, brief review of this year. Okay, we said, according to Yochanan ben Nuri, right? We don't blow shofar for Malchior, and Malchior's in the third bracha. What did Rebbe Akiva say to him? Well, according to the Gemara, if so, there shouldn't be 10 psukim, there should be 9. It seemed very arbitrary. How did Rav Salvechi make it less arbitrary? The 10th pasuk is serving a different role. The 10th pasuk is part of the bakasha, and bakasha is only together with shofar blowing. Though we had Moses Bibi, good question on it, but fine. Okay, guys, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip the middle section. I'm not going to review it. Okay, I'm just going to review the last section. We said that the psukim are Torah, Ketuvim, Nevi'im. Let's go through four answers, and Rav Hunter's found it again, and we'll call it a day. Four answers. If I ask Tosfos, why is it Ketuvim, then Nevi'im? What does Tosfos say? But which chronology? Chronology of authorship. Chronology of authorship. Great. If I ask the Ran, what would the Ran say? Mom, what's the Ran's assumption? Navi has more Kedusha than Ketuvim. If I ask the Ritva, what would the Ritva say? They're the same Kedusha. In fact, the reason we put Ketuvim first is so that people will take it seriously. People don't take Ketuvim seriously. That's why we put it first. Okay, I had a fourth answer. It's not mine. I just couldn't find it inside. Maybe what's the chronology here? Not chronology of authorship, but chronology of theme, right? Shofar blowing early in history, shofar blowing now, shofar blowing in our aspiration for Mashiach. Great. But last I point here. But then Rav Hunter had a great question. He says, the Ritva just knocked the Ran out of the water. How could the Ran say Navi has more Kedusha? The Gemara in Megillah says you could put one on top of the other, it doesn't matter. For selling them, it doesn't matter. It's explicit Gemara that they've got the same level of Kedusha. Says Rav Hunter something very deep. He says, no, you have to realize there are two aspects to messages in this world. There's the written word and the oral transmission, and they have different power altogether. Remind me some of the time it's not late, guys. There's a great book by a guy named Walter Ong called Orality and Literacy, about all the differences between oral cultures and literate cultures. Remind me sometime, we'll do a good tangent on it. But not now, because it's 2 minutes still young. Okay, so there's oral transmission and there's written transmission. What is Ketuvim? Only written. What is Nevi'im? Oral that became written. So when I'm focusing on the book, I'm holding books, I'm only focused on the written word. Oh, there's no difference between Nevi'im and Ketuvim. When I'm talking, when I'm reciting things, all of a sudden I'm opening up a new aspect. That's an aspect that is more manifest in, or only manifest in, Nevi'im. So in Rosh Hashanah davening, all of a sudden, Nevi'im is more Kedusha than Ketuvim. All right, guys, everybody have a great lunch and a great Shabbos.